Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia dealers of Ireland. Wherever the next 7 years bring you, Kia are with you all the way.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And it's Joe at rte.ie. It's the simplest email in the world, probably not as well known as the one from 5 o'clock today, Irish time, 2.5 hours, 160 minutes, 150 minutes time. Joe Biden will be president, but still in office for the next 2.5 hours is Donald Trump, and one of the many people. Now, again, as like most things with Mr. Trump, John Bolton said he resigned before he was National Security Advisor, former illustrious career, but with previous presidents, but also former US Ambassador to the UN. John Bolton, good morning to you in Washington and good afternoon from Dublin, Ireland. How are you, John?
Well, thanks for having me. Glad to be with you.
Okay, and what's your feeling now, John, with 2.5 hours left of Donald Trump's presidency?
Well, it's a real hinge point in history, and I think for many people in the United States, both Trump's strongest supporters and his strongest critics in the media and elsewhere, to this point, as you say, 2.5 hours to go, still don't fully realize, don't comprehend the massive, incalculable change that's about to occur. That Trump will go from sitting in the Oval Office to sitting by the swimming pool at Mar-a-Lago. He will never be president again. I don't think he will run again. His influence is diminishing minute by minute, and once the noon hour comes, it will begin dropping even more dramatically. And people have been so fixated on him, love him, hate him, or anything in between for over 4 years, they still don't get that point, but they will soon.
He said about an hour and 90 minutes ago as he left the White House, and he organized that ceremony at the Joint Base Andrews on Air Force One, which meant Joe Biden couldn't use Air Force One to get to Washington, but that's which has happened with previous incumbent. But he said, we were not a regular administration. He then went on to say, David, he was the best 4 years ever. He did a lot more than this line he used, a lot more than people ever thought. He's asking people to remember all of his accomplishments, another self-aggrandizing again. But he said, we will be back. This is Arnold Schwarzenegger type remark. We will be back, he said. What do you think of that, John?
Well, sure, he'd love to be back. Donald Trump doesn't have a philosophy. He doesn't do government policy. It's all about Donald Trump, and what he loves is the pageantry, the ceremony, and the adulation from his supporters. That's what he wants, and I'm sure he's got enough money to keep getting that for the next several years, at least until some of these investigations and lawsuits catch up with him. But in terms of the ability to affect events in Washington, I think, as I say, both critics and supporters have been vastly overestimating the amount of influence he's going to have. Time moves on. There's nothing like being an ex-president to be yesterday's news.
Wow. And John, your take on, I know you've spoken about this, but January the 6th, 2021 will be remembered, I think, by most Americans and people beyond. It will be remembered along with 9/11, and it'll be remembered along with December the 7th, 1941, 80 years ago in American history. Your take at this stage on January the 6th, are you getting more and more, as you read more and more and people discover more and more of the organization behind it, John, do you think it was a bigger threat than anyone thought it was on the day?
No, I don't think it was a big threat. I mean, there's a lot of hyperthyroid reaction to it in many places, including in the United States. But we've had a civil war before. We know what a civil war looks like. This isn't anywhere close to it. These are some lunatics who planned violence. I hope they are prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, given the maximum sentences possible with no possibility of parole. And if they lose the key on the way, that won't bother me either. This is something I think Trump understood to be a possibility. He wanted to disrupt the certification of the Electoral College vote, and his inaction while the mob was actually in the Capitol speaks to his intention. But let's be clear, there's also a catastrophic failure of security around the Capitol.
On today.
It was just pathetic what happened.
What do you think should happen, Donald Trump? Because of January 6th?
Well, I think there are law enforcement agencies, the Justice Department, the District of Columbia government, others looking into it. There are rumors of evidence being uncovered about coordination among some of the people in the demonstration and members of Congress. If it turns up there's evidence of coordination with Trump or people in his administration, I think the level of outrage will grow. I just think we need to see the evidence, and we'll take it from there.
But do you think Donald Trump, President of the United States of America, as he is now, do you think he should be, the impeachment procedure should continue in the Senate, given that you said, you imply, John, stop me, check me if you wish, but you imply that we might be better off letting him be yesterday's man?
Well, think of the worst thing you can do to Donald Trump. Just think of the direst punishment you can give him.
It would be
not to pay attention to him.
So
there is that. Now, look, there's a serious constitutional question here, whether the Senate has jurisdiction to try the article of impeachment from the House since Trump is out of office. I won't bore your listeners with a discussion of the U.S. Constitution, but it's a very serious question, and it will be litigated probably all the way up to the Supreme Court. So that is oxygen that keeps Trump alive. And I think that's unfortunate for the country that he's going to get that, apparently.
And his pardoning of the likes of Steve Bannon and Elliot Briody, that to you would be predictable, would it?
Well, again, it falls into the category of not as bad as it could have been. Bill Clinton pardoned his brother-in-law. Among other things, he pardoned Mark Rich. Sadly, at the end, some of the people deserve pardons, and some of them don't. But that's an authority vested by the Constitution and the president. And with Donald Trump, he takes advantage of everything he can.
When you went to work for Donald Trump, John, did you know it would end in tears, or did you go to work for him because you agreed with him, or because you were serving your country?
Well, it's not a question of agreeing with him because, as I say, he doesn't have a philosophy. I had heard everything there was to hear about Donald Trump. Nobody calls me naive, so I went in with my eyes open. But I also thought that he would be affected by the weight of the responsibility of the office, by the gravity of the national security decisions he would be making, and we could do sensible policy. And that turned out not to be true, and my book really is the story of how that turned out not to be true. He went into office not being fit for the presidency, and he comes out of the office not having learned a thing, as far as I can tell.
And your book, The Room Where It Happened, the one thing that struck me about your book, and of all the books that have been written, it's full of detail, it's full of research in terms of the issues, and for a foreign policy wonk, it's a very educational read, apart from the interest in the events that are mentioned. And John, looking back on what I'm trying to remember that note that you referred to in your book that Mike Pompeo passed to you when he was talking about Kim Jong-un. He said, this is Mike Pompeo, who's now Trump's main ally as of an hour ago at least, and he said, is this really happening? Are we listening to this shit from the president?
Yeah. Well, look, that's exactly what I thought, too. We couldn't believe it, sitting there, what he was saying. And that was sort of the first time. That was in June of 2018. I just started in April, so it was the first big international meeting, obviously one of the biggest events of Trump's presidency. And, he gave away, among other things, U.S.-South Korean military exercises, big military exercises, on the Korean Peninsula to defend against Kim Jong-un, and got nothing for it. Not well reported, but I think pretty significant. But that's Trump. He just makes it up as he goes along.
Did you regret working for him?
No, I don't regret it. Look, I think the alternative was somebody whose knuckles drag on the ground and who drools from the corners of his mouth. And a lot of people went to work for Donald Trump because they wanted to serve the country. Each of us has our own story of how long we stood it until we resigned or got fired or whatever the end was. I agreed with some of them sometimes, disagreed with them on other times, but a lot of people had the country's best interests at heart.
Did he do anything good in the 4 years, John?
Well, I think he did. Look, I'm a conservative Republican. I think he appointed hundreds of conservatives to the federal judiciary, three to the Supreme Court. He dramatically increased the size of the Department of Defense budget from the Obama years. He followed sound economic policies, nothing unusual for a Republican. But these were all transactional in his mind. They were designed for political benefit, not because he believed in them, but because he thought it would benefit him personally.
And the 4 years, John, in the White House, how would you characterize them? To say please God, you'll have adult grandchildren. If you're explaining to your adult grandchildren who weren't might have been much younger or whatever during his term, how would you characterize his 4 years in office?
Well, it was chaos, and we're lucky that we didn't have more severe crises than COVID-19, which has been bad enough. We've just passed the mark in the U.S. of 400,000 dead, and it's not entirely due to Donald Trump's failures, but it is in large measure. He never took it seriously at the beginning. He didn't want to hear about it. He didn't want to hear about problems with China, where the disease originated. He didn't want to hear about threats to the American economy, which he saw as his ticket to reelection. Even when he finally got worried about it, he was incapable of developing a strategic response. He hindered parts of the government that were trying to do their job. It was just one failure after another. And in the last 2.5-3 months, he hasn't paid any attention to it at all.
And
which,
John, I
not helped with the vaccine rollout.
And I'm conscious of the time, and I don't want to diminish the fact that 400,000 Americans have died because of COVID, and that needs to be mentioned and recorded again and again and again. But John, as he leaves the White House, are we? I don't mean this literally, but are we lucky to get out? Are we lucky to get out alive? Was he ever, do you think, close to initiating a war, be it with Iran, Iraq, North Korea? Were we ever close to?
No, I think to the contrary, he was as they say in Texas, all hat and no cattle. He had a mouth that he used all the time, but much of the presidency was rhetoric rather than performance. I think COVID-19 was a crisis, a slow-moving crisis. He did not perform well. If we had had a real crisis in national security, a nuclear standoff between Russia and the United States or the United States and China, I think he would have melted down. I don't think he would have known how to handle it.
So you were never worried, like we were told other senior security and defense personnel were, that he had the nuclear, he still has them, by the way, in Mar-a-Lago.
He does not have them in his pocket. That's mythology about that.
Well, where
it's a little bit harder than that.
Well, I know that there's two sets of them at the minute, one waiting to be with Joe Biden, so to speak, in 2 hours' time, and one with... But you were never worried about that. You never said this guy could go off in the middle of the night and land us all in
trouble. It wouldn't happen. Remember, our military will follow the orders of the commander-in-chief if they're lawful. And if the situation arose, I wouldn't write this into law or anything else, but I'm very confident that neither Donald Trump or anyone else could do it.
Okay, John, finally, what do you think of the whole scenario today where he didn't invite Joe and Jill Biden to the White House, he won't attend the inauguration, he left this morning on Air Force One, he wouldn't afford anyone, he wouldn't even congratulate Joe Biden, he wouldn't even, I don't know if he's left a note on the desk as they normally do. What do you think of all that petty behaviour? I'm prejudging
as well. Well, it's totally... Yeah, no, it's totally graceless, which is fairly typical of Trump. This has happened before in American history. In 1801, John Adams skipped town before Thomas Jefferson took the oath of office. But in Jefferson's inaugural address, after a very bitter campaign, Jefferson said, "We are all Republicans, we are all Federalists." And that was a way to bring the country back together. Biden has that opportunity in a few hours. We'll see what he says.
And you think, if I was to ask you for one word finally, John, for the 4 years from where you were sitting, both inside and outside the administration, would that, I don't want to put words in, would that be chaos? Or?
Well, I describe being in the administration as living inside a pinball machine. And I do think Donald Trump thrives on chaos, and that is maybe that's good for his personal life. It's terrible for U.S. policy and security.
Okay, John Bolton, former National Security Advisor. Stay well, stay safe, John. You and your family, thanks indeed for taking the time. I know you're a busy man on this day.
And to you too.
Okay,
thank you very much.
Stay safe. That's John Bolton. 51551 Marshall.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.